today.
Mark Levin, also known as the Great One, is not mean-spirited. He's passionate, and he fears for the future of the country if liberals get unchecked power over it. And he is, we are in a war.
Libs are fun when they're not in power. All right, I've got my friend John Lott on the phone. John Lott, I don't know how to describe, you're kind of a Renaissance intellectual. You know the law, you know economics, you've written many best-selling books. How are you, my friend?
Doing great. Good to talk to you.
Now, you went to University of Chicago Law School. Where did you know Obama from?
I was a fellow at the University of Chicago Law School from 95 through 99.
And you knew Obama somewhat?
I did. He wasn't really around the law school a huge amount, but he was a lecturer there during the time. When he was brought on as a lecturer, it was common knowledge that he was going to be running for public office. In fact, that's basically the only reason why he was brought on at the law school, because there were a few faculty that had objected to him because he hadn't published anything, really, didn't have any working papers, didn't have any of the normal academic accompaniments that somebody would have for getting a position like that at the University of Chicago Law School. And I know Bill Landis was one of the people who had raised concerns, but he had been assured that...
Tell everybody who Bill Landis is.
Bill Landis is probably one of the more famous law and economics professors in the world. He's been a common co-author with Dick Posner, who's probably the best-known appeals court judge in the country on the Seventh Circuit, who had an association with the University of Chicago Law School for 40 years also. And Bill had concerns, but he was told that Obama was never going to be a regular faculty person, that having an academic position and only having to teach a few hours a week would give him lots of time to go and campaign for office and do the types of things one would like to do for that. So that was the understanding when he was brought in.
Now, tell me of your not so much relationship with Obama, but your tell me how you observed him. What was going on there?
Well, as I say, he didn't hang around the law school too much. He didn't go to the normal seminars.
Well, for instance, did you ever debate him? Did you ever get into it with him, discussions about issues and so forth?
He wouldn't discuss things. I'll give you an example. The first time I went up and talked to him, I went over, introduced myself. He turned to me and he said, "Oh, you're the gun guy." And I said, "Yeah, I guess so." And he said, "I don't believe people should be able to own guns." And I knew he had been helping out with the city of Chicago suit against the gun makers, and I said, "Well, maybe we can get together and have lunch sometime and talk about it." And he just turned around and walked away. I mean, it was just, he kind of smirked at me briefly and then just turned around and walked away. Mm-hmm. And that's often the type of conversation we had. I remember one time after a seminar about the only time I knew him to show up for a seminar, he had tried to ask a question in the seminar, which I don't think hardly anybody understood what he was saying. I thought I did. And I went up to him after the seminar and I said, "You know, I thought maybe it would have been clearer if you had tried to ask it this way." And he just turned around and walked away. It was something that when people he had who disagreed with him, he just didn't want to talk with you. I had the feeling that people he disagreed with, he just viewed as evil. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he had any problem talking to people that he agreed with, but this notion in the media that he's somehow a type of person that will come and unite people and bring people together. And people can change after a decade. I suppose that's possible. But for somebody who was in his late 30s at the time, it's hard for me to fathom that he could change that much. I have to just give your listeners an idea. I'm a conservative. It makes you fairly unique in academia. You look at, there's a survey that was done a few years ago of the top 100 law schools, and you find that About 93% were registered as Democrats of the faculty. 4% were registered as Republicans. And even that kind of understates the difference, because for somebody to get tenure as Republican, they basically have to be the type of person who keeps their views to themselves. You have to get a supermajority, which means to get tenure, you have to get most of the Democrats to vote for you. The reverse isn't true. But the thing is, even though you would be a conservative, most of the people who you would disagree with would like to argue. I mean, Cass Sunstein is somebody that maybe a lot of your listeners might know.
He's a law professor who I have enormous disagreements with, yes.
Right. I mean, Cass and I probably don't agree on much of anything, but I had Cass over for dinner at least 10 times, and we enjoyed arguing all the time. And that's kind of what you normally think of when you think of academics. At least, at the very least, they should be people who like to discuss intellectual issues. But Obama was the type of person, I mean, to put it bluntly, I mean, he was just rude every time you would try to get into a discussion with him if you were somebody, I felt, who he thought he disagreed with.
Well, John, I appreciate that. You know, people are trying to figure out this man, and the more information we can get, the better. So I appreciate you you coming on, my friend.
One last comment about Milton Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Talk about mild guys.
Talk show host. Mild and moderate.
Talk show host that Stanley was on earlier when you were interviewing, the one that caused this commotion, the radio show he was on. I mean, I listened to the podcast of the show, and anybody who knows or has listened to Milt's show over the years, because he's an institution in Chicago, knows it takes a lot to kind of befuddle the guy. I mean, he's just an incredibly mild manner, calm guy. And the way he was being treated there was just amazing. And there were actual some of the calls, as I remember listening to, which mentioned that people were threatening to go and call the FCC in order to put some type of complaint forward with regard to the fact that they had the person that you were interviewing on there.
Is there any doubt in your mind, your few dealings with Obama? You've heard about what they're doing with the Justice Department and trying to get a man prosecuted. You saw what they did with his talk show and what they did with Kurtz and the talk show. Any doubt in your mind that they would reinstitute the Fairness Doctrine and ram it down our throats?
Oh, I have absolutely no doubt. I think Obama's spin is a little bit different. There's a part in the FCC regulations regarding diversity with regard to boards for radio stations, which would require community representation on the boards.
So he can hit it a number of ways, is what you're saying.
That's right. And so that by trying to control the boards, then they could control the content of what's on the radio.
And that would be very Alinsky-like. On the one side of your mouth, talking about free speech, on the other, basically taking over control of these various corporations.
No, I mean, he's a true believer. Mm-hmm. And but he's kind of the worst type of true believer in that he just really didn't want to listen to people on the other side or talk to them. And I mean, maybe it's just because I knew the guy, but I'm more scared in this presidential election than I've been before. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe if I had known people who had run for office previously, I would be worried too. But, the way this guy, I mean, he's such a left-winger. I mean, he was
Can you give me any explanation, even fathom one, why he would have been buddies with William Ayers?
No, it's really hard to understand. I mean, in the amount of time he appears to have spent with him, but it's just not that. I mean, you look at places like he was on the Joyce Foundation board. In fact, he was considered to be president of that board for a while. The Joyce Foundation is like by far the leading private funder of gun ban research and organizations in the country. I mean, it's just, there's so many things. I mean, these are the guys that they fund that would be to the left of the Brady campaign. I mean, the people they funded would be people who wanted to have outright bans of guns. I mean, they wouldn't have banned handguns in the titles of some of the groups that they would fund. And, I mean, he can go and claim now after the Supreme Court decision that the Supreme Court was merely ratifying his views on guns, that he was supposedly always against the D.C. gun ban. But this is a guy who not only from personal statements to me, but other things you can find from candidate interviews and stuff he's done before, you know, he would define the edge of the Democratic Party in terms of their views on guns. I mean, he was for complete bans on handguns, semi-automatic guns, bans on any stores within 5 miles of a park or a school, which essentially banned the sale of guns in virtually all the states in the country. I mean, that's just one tiny example, but, you know, it's just not Ayers, which is obviously an extreme case, but you look at other types of associations, and he's been associated with the most left-wing groups in many areas.
And, of course, right now they're trying to paper over all this with these speeches and the people who are giving speeches on his behalf. His speech tonight won't get in any of the radicalism, will it?
No, I'm sure it won't. I mean, just look at the changes in his positions over the last couple months. Everything from FISA, abortion, campaign, public financing of campaigns, the NAFTA. I mean, you can go down the list of things, even the death penalty. If you look at his views on early candidate statements that he had when he was first running for office, he was against the death penalty in all circumstances. I mean, he didn't even qualify it with something. He just said he was in favor of a complete ban on the death penalty, as well as a complete ban on gun ownership. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it could just be in the last few months he's had this major, you know, enlightenment that caused him to change his views. But I can't imagine that if a Republican had changed on even a quarter of the issues, on such fundamental issues for people as Obama has, that they wouldn't be raked over the coals. Just on the gun issue briefly, you know, the Democratic platform, despite Obama going out and claiming now that he somehow supported getting rid of the D.C. gun ban all the time, the Democratic platform actually supports the Chicago gun ban.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they can't even get their ducks together all in line on this stuff. But, you know, all right, well, thank you very much.
No. I thank you. This is very, very edifying, very important. And God bless you, my friend.
Oh, well, same to you. Thank you.
All right. Isn't this fascinating? The more we look, the more we learn. Now, the Levin surge is officially on. It's a response to the intimidation tactics of the Obama campaign. The intimidation tactics to conceal Obama's very deep and personal relationship with William Ayers,